Good afternoon and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Jonathan Curiel, a writer and journalist, and I'll be the moderator for today's program called Jordan. We also welcome our listening and internet audiences and invite everyone to visit us online at www.commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speakers, Dr. Maher Khalaji, who is a Jordanian born and raised scientist and science advisor, and Celia Menchel, who's chair of the club's member-led Middle East Forum. Would you please welcome Celia Menchel and Dr. Maher Khalaji?
Good afternoon. So I'll be beginning and speaking for about 15 minutes or so and showing some images. And then thank you very much to Dr. Khalaji, who will also be showing his Jordan and backing, covering my back. I should emphasize that because I'm a volunteer at the Commonwealth Club, what I say today is entirely my own opinion, and I do not represent the club. This program came about because I took an unexpected, brief, and wonderful trip to Jordan, and because I promised a young Bedouin at Petra that I would tell my friends to come to Jordan, a strong U.S. ally. How did I get to Jordan? By Turkish Airlines on a half-price fare and 3 hours short because they go over Canada. Wonderful airline. And when I go to Israel, I stay in the Abraham hostels. I share their philosophy, which is to provide comfortable, affordable lodging and tours, which introduce people to different cultures for better understanding. And that's why I took their tour to Jordan. Oh, forgive me, a little louder. I'm so sorry. That's why I took their tour to Jordan. I had found out I had 3 days left in my stay in Israel, and they had a 3-day tour, which I took, and I'm so glad that I did. So I took a chance. I didn't know what to expect. For example, its size, women's rights, economy, etc. Now I have a further idea. The size of Jordan. It's the size of Virginia, 4 times the size of Israel. Its population is about 9 million, including over 1 million Syrian refugees and thousands of Iraqi Christians, which puts a great strain on the economy, especially since tourism is down due to concerns about ISIS. However, Jordan is considered a safe, welcome country, and I found it to be so. Another Jordanian told me that ISIS or Daesh could not gain a foothold in Jordan because Jordanians do not think Daesh is Islamic. They have too much respect for the royal family of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan, which was founded in 1946. And the Hashemites are direct descendants of Muhammad, peace be upon him. And because Daesh shot down a Jordanian pilot, a national hero, tortured him, burned him alive, and it was a terrible disaster. Jordan is not an oil-producing country, but has oil and shale. It has many minerals, such as phosphates. It has uranium, technology, health, tourism, armament industries, but depends greatly on tourism. And as far as women's rights are concerned, women have the vote. Women can drive. The literacy rate in Jordan is 95%. That was a surprise to me. Ours, I don't think, is 95%. And all women can go to university. In fact, we had the most wonderful, wonderful driver who told me that three of his 5 children have already graduated from university, and they're all female. Jordan is a forward-thinking constitutional monarchy with an elected parliament, a moderate Arab nation. Okay. Now I'd like to quote from a wonderful book called Leap of Faith by Queen Noor, an American woman who became the queen of King Hussein. She says, "I distinctly recall my first impression of Jordan. I was overwhelmed by an extraordinary sense of belonging, an almost mystical sense of peace. I share that feeling." The Queen continues, "The archaeological treasures I saw were stunning, among them the walled city of Jerash with its colonnaded streets, temples, and theaters. This is Jerash. And you can see this is a Jordanian playing a bagpipe. It's left over from the British days. There's a heavy Greek influence. The Greeks were there. The Romans were there. The Crusaders were there. Everybody was there. But it was buried for many years under sand, and it was discovered again, rediscovered, by an Englishman, a German, actually, and it was excavated starting in 1925 to the present. This is a wonderful amphitheater. And you can see the colonnades that the queen mentions, and at the bottom is a very ancient mosque. And where I'm standing when I took that picture, it was the ruins of a Christian church. This is the mosaic floor of the Christian church, which I understand is built on top of a synagogue. There are no Jews left in Jordan, and hardly any remnants at all that they were there. But in biblical times, they definitely were there. And in 1950, the rate of Sunni Muslims was about 70%, and Christians was 30%. Today, it's more like 95-96% and 4-5% Christian. But they have freedom of religion. This is the Temple of Artemis in Greek, and Diana in Roman. Yes, it's quite a stunning building. And here's some more. There's something I'd like to point out. This is the beginning of the tourist season. They're all empty. The streets are empty. And partly it's because people are afraid of Daesh, but Daesh is not in Jordan, as far as I know. I'm so sorry. It was in March. Yes, this March. And there's something else I must say. I was only there for 3 days, so I'm not an expert, but 3 days was enough to fall in love with it. You can see that amphitheater again over there. Those are children flying kites, but you can't see the kites. That's at the Citadel. In Amman, the bottom is Christian and the top is Islamic. This is the Palestinian delicacy that I've had in Israel before, in Jaffa. It's quite delicious, and our driver stopped the car and bought it for us. There were only 5 of us on this trip. We left at 7 in the morning. We got on the road, went to Jerash, and here we are just before we went into Petra. Amman is the capital of Jordan. It used to be called Philadelphia, and one of our group of 5 came from Philadelphia, a young man. And unfortunately, when he was coming back into Israel, he brought with him some Bedouin knives. Not the most wisest thing to do. He was stopped at the border, but otherwise, getting through the border from Israel to Jordan was a snap, and coming back took a little longer, but it was very easy to do. And the tour that I was on was marvelous. The guide was probably the best guide I've ever had. It cost me $440. 3 days, 2 nights, everything included. Oh, and I'd like to also mention that Amman is built on 7 hills and has a temperate climate. And Jordan has 330 days of sunshine a year and has begun using solar power in earnest. Another Jordanian told me that, So this is the Bedouin tent that we entered while we were waiting for dinner there. And this was a musician. This is the pots that dinner was served in. And I'm very happy to play this afterwards, but there's a shortage of time. This is looking out at the hills through the tent. But in the morning, I found out that they weren't hills, they were rocks. This is from my tent cabin. And now we get to Petra. This is, and I'd like to quote from Queen Nora. My favorite route south was the King's Highway, which followed ancient trade routes. The three wise men used it to reach Bethlehem, and Moses used it to lead his people towards Canaan. A few hours south of Iman lies the ancient Nabataean city of Petra, built over 2,000 years ago. Petra is a new seven wonder of the world, carved into multicolored sandstone cliffs. It was hidden for 700 years from the West until a Swiss explorer stumbled on it in 1812. At first, Maher and I were going to call this Hidden Jordan. Petra is entered through a mile-long narrow gorge called the Sikh, which cuts through the cliffs to emerge into a breathtaking marvel of shrines, caves, and tombs carved into the stone. It has a palette of natural colors that no artist can duplicate. This is going through the Sikh out to the treasury, which is what most people go to see. And I was very surprised to see, that's me, that it's a rather large city. The Nabataeans were traders, frankincense, etc., very successful about 2,000 years ago. The Romans couldn't defeat them here, so they changed the trade routes, which did them in. Also, the Nabataeans, who originally came from Saudi Arabia, were... they became Christian, and they were also done in by several other peoples, including the Muslims. I understand that Jordan was the first country that Muhammad, peace be upon him, invaded. Jordan was the first country. This is an amphitheater there. These are just pictures, and this is colors of that you see there. I used my iPhone 5 because I didn't know I was going to Jordan, and or I would have taken a much better camera. This is a brown camel, a Christian ruin, some more areas. And whatever time of day you're there, the treasury, which is just a facade carved into the stone, looks different and looks more beautiful every time. I wanted to say that I stayed by myself most of the time because the rest of the group was very young, and I'm 76 next week, and they had 900 steps to climb up to the top of Petra so you could see much better, but I'm going back very soon, and it's on my list. I'm going to climb those stairs. I don't know. There may be. So the Bedouins... don't live in Petra anymore. They were removed by the government. They have a wonderful city outside. There's also wonderful hotels and the campground that I stayed in. They help people on horseback. And this is, by the way, a tomb behind it. And now I have to go on just a little bit further. Our next stop was Wadi Rum, also called Valley of the Moon. Lawrence of Arabia was filmed here, as was The Martian. Even though Petra is magnificent and a seventh wonder of the world, I found Wadi Rum to be just as fascinating in its own stark way. It was at the end of our trip, and I didn't want to leave, but shall return again, not only to climb the steps at Petra, but to camp out under the stars at Wadi Rum. Oh, that's my travel mates. And there's some sage tea at the back of the room, and I bought it in the Bedouin tent there. And you can see the beautiful colors. That's me in the middle of a rose-colored sand dune. That's why they filmed The Martian there, because of the color. This is a little gorge of sorts, and in it you will find petroglyphs and all kinds of carvings going back thousands of years. It was hidden, and our wonderful guide took us there. And now we're saying goodbye to Wadi Rum. I'd like to close with something else from Queen Noor. What she said was, all three Abrahamic faiths have the same values, and we need to join together to fight extremism and to live these values personified or by the rule that we should treat our neighbor or our brother the way we would like to be treated. And now it's my great pleasure to turn this over to Dr. Mahir Kalaji. Thank you.
Okay, well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for the kind introduction, Jonathan. It's a pleasure and a real privilege to be here sharing the platform with Celia. I've come to know Celia for quite a while now. She is actually one of the nicest and more compassionate people who is completely dedicated to peace and untiring effort to bring people together. And these are only some of her fantastic qualities. She didn't ask me to say any of this, by the way. She didn't pay me for that. I've known her for a number of years, and, you know, we agree on lots of things and we disagree on much more things. Many things we have disagreements on, but we agree on a few things. And when she asked me today to share the platform with her, I was delighted that it's one of the things that we actually do agree upon, which we'll focus our agreement on, which is her personal experience of Jordan. And from my point of view, it's to show you the beauty of the treasures of Jordan. I'm going to just be positive today. And the treasures of Jordan are the people of Jordan and the historical sites. As Jonathan said, I was born and raised in Jordan. I have seen it go through big changes, the 67 war, etc., the civil war in 1970. And, you know, every year we say, next year will be better, inshallah. Inshallah is Arabic for good willing. You don't say it at airports in the US, you don't say it on aircrafts, because you get deported or you get actually moved from that aircraft. Hopefully this is a secure place. And it's a sanctuary for saying that word. Anyway, inshallah we say next year will be much better. But things continuously get worse. People still live there. We have to get on with our lives. I mean, I don't live there, but people have to get on with their lives. And I try and go back there once every 12 or 18 months. And I've been doing this for the last 20-odd years. And I notice changes every time I go back. Positive changes and, of course, many negative changes. But for today, I'm going to stick with the positive. Please don't ask me anything about the negative changes. That's something for another session. Okay. One of the positive things which Celia mentioned was literacy. Literacy is extremely high now in Jordan, which is something that people are very proud of. The second thing which she mentioned that I want to reemphasize is that you see, every time I go back, I see more women in more senior positions. There are ministers. Our representative of the United Nations is a woman. They're in science. They're in technology. They're in every walk of life, which is something that I think people there are very proud of. The last thing, which is positive from my point of view, people may not see it that way, is that Jordan has taken refugees. That's very positive. It's not just for being a humanitarian gesture. No, not that. It's a moral duty. And I'm really pleased they've done that. And I think in the long term, they will reap the benefit of what they have done. I think it'll be very good, a very good gesture, that. And the last positive thing is that every time I go back, they've discovered something new archaeologically. Only today, just when I woke up this morning, I was checking the BBC website. They've reported a new discovery in Petra. I have been to Petra for like 20 times. They've discovered something new using high-resolution satellite imaging and drones, where they've discovered this flat structure in the south of the city, which is the width of two swimming pools and the length is one swimming pool. So it's a huge structure. And they reckon it's from the second century BCE, and they're still now looking to try and to see what happened there. So every time you go back, you see something new. So when I go back normally, that's what I'm going to talk about, where I visit. I mean, Celia talked about my watering holes. My watering holes are normally, let me get the arrow down. I can't get the arrow down. Petra there in the south. Is there an arrow on this? No. Petra there in the south, which you can see. And just north of Amman is Jerash. These are the regular tourist places which Celia has described. And, you know, it doesn't matter how many times you go back there, you will see something different. Every time you'll see something different. That's why I never have enough of going to Petra. I'm going to mention Petra a bit, Jerash a bit, but I'm going to show you other places which I found equally amazing and fascinating. So this is the map that I'll be using. And normally I land in Amman. I spend a couple of days with my mom, then I hire a car and I go straight down to Petra. Okay. I just want to see what's happening. There's a fantastic Marriott hotel there, which is right above the city. And when you look down, you get some fantastic views of the city itself and of Wadi Araba to the west. And you see beautiful sunsets there. This is what Celia has showed you. I tried to date my images. This is 2009, and that's my young daughter over there. I've taken series of these every year or every 2 years of her standing in the same place. Okay, and she's herself growing up in that gap over there. Look, I mean, I'm there in the morning. The only thing you see is her and a camel over there. And that's 2009. Okay. This is what Celia showed you again. And these are the pictures we took. There is no one there. Okay. This is 2013. Okay, we go early in the morning, granted, but still, there is no one there. The beauty of this is the changes in color that you get depending on the time of the day, depending on the season. It goes from yellow to red to deep red. Now, Celia mentioned about climbing the 900 steps. Well, we did that, and there are no railings, okay, and you have to be careful. You can get a donkey, but I feel sorry for the donkeys because they have to do the same thing. But it's worth climbing up with some water. And this, when you get to the top, you see this, which not many people do that. And it's an amazing structure again, which is very similar to the treasury which Celia had referred to. And if you're right at the top of the mountain there, and when you look down to Wadi Araba there, and you could see another mountain which is supposedly to be the tomb of Aaron. And that's another day you can spend the whole day climbing up the mountain to get there. She was delighted. She finished the 990 steps or whatever it is. She was really enjoying that. So after that, normally I would spend a couple of nights in Petra and I would... Because every time you see something different, really you see something different. And I drive my way to the east of Petra and to what Celia showed you was Wadi Rum. And again, it's a mystical place. You have to really spend some time there. And every time you go, you see something different. Okay, and this is, I was quite high up on top one of the mountains. And this is quite a way away looking at, this is with a zoom lens, looking at these camels there. This is quite a high ledge as well. I mean, the drop, there's a sheer drop of about 400 feet to the right-hand side over there. And my wife thought I was crazy taking our little daughter there in case she decided to fly. Fortunately, she did not. The view there is stunning. Again, it depends on the time of the day and the month and the weather conditions. It could be something yellowish, or it could be deep red. I have not played with the colors in this. It could be absolutely deep red. The changes are absolutely stunning there. So we do this, and Celia showed you that, so I won't dwell on these images there. So normally I head back to Petra, spend another night, and then in the morning I decide, okay, where do I want to go? I want to go to the Dead Sea. Okay. Now, the Dead Sea, normally people go all the way up to Amman, or Madaba there, it's just south west of Amman, and there's a road which goes to the Dead Sea. Or you go to Aqaba and take the road back. Or somebody told me a few years ago, oh, don't worry about it. There's a road which goes down from Petra down to the Dead Sea. Foolishly, I listened to these guys, and I'm at the edge of the road here taking the picture, and there's a drop there of like 500 to 600, 700 feet down there, and the road is only wide enough for one car. And every now and then you see a truck coming up with vegetables from the Jordan Valley. And, you know, what do you do? Somebody has to reverse. And I was terrified that these guys, clearly are used to it, and they would guide you. And eventually you start driving down there. And you could see the road just carries on and carries on. It should be a very quick road. It took like 2.5 hours, 3 hours, just for a few kilometers. And every now and then, that road just stops. See, at the end there, it just stops. There, you know, the paved part of it stops. And so you're driving on dirt and, you know, start navigating. What is the sun? Which is the way west? Which is east? So you're trying to get your way. And eventually, you know, you work it out and you hit another paved road and you continue. But it's an exciting experience, and it's a very enjoyable experience. I've done it 3 or 4 times since, now that I'm used to it, and it really is a fantastic adventure over there. So, but it's worth it, because once you've reached the Red Sea, the Dead Sea, and some of you have been to the Dead Sea on the across the, on the western side, you would see something like this. And you know, this for me is just sheer relaxation. I'm trying to be inconspicuous there on the bottom right-hand there of the corner of the picture. So for one reason, look at this. There's only me, one person under the umbrella there, and somebody swimming over there. And this is the season when it's meant to be busy, okay, that time. And this place is absolutely fantastic. It's absolute, you know, sheer relaxation. This is right on the Dead Sea. And I put this again. This is not just to show you that it's 415 meter below sea level, which is like 1,300 feet below sea level. So you don't need to put your sunblock, you know, because it's already protected down there. So, but it's look at these empty spaces over there. Okay, they didn't run away because I was there. They were empty. Okay, and that's early in the morning because that's a nice time to go there. So I thought, okay, let's get to the sea. And again, I assure you, the people didn't escape because I jumped into the sea. There was no one there. There's only a couple of people in there from the Ukraine and from Russia, I think. But the rest, there was hardly anyone there. So I was pretending to be an intellectual reading something over there, trying to keep my head above the water anyway. But it's a fascinating experience. It's a fantastic experience. Now, this is what the people normally do in Jordan. They go Petra, they go Jerash, which Syria showed you, and they go to Wadi Rum and the Dead Sea. But I started going to other places. And one of the new places which wasn't there when I was a kid there, when I was growing up, is the a part which was completely blocked because of the war with Israel, the 67 war. And the Jordan River now is, you can get to it. And it's some fascinating places there. So head up north. You see where the Dead Sea is, just slightly north of the Dead Sea there. And you come across, this is the River Jordan. There's a young lady again. You know, most of my photos are with her showing me something. That's the River Jordan. It's actually literally from here to that speaker over there. Okay. And has anybody come across any problems which have occurred across this border? You know, no, you don't. You don't see any soldiers on the Jordanian side, okay? You don't see them. You actually see them on the Israeli side, and that's the flag across there. They're more worried than the Jordanians are. It's quite a peaceful border there. And this is what the Jordanian built is a complex there, which they call the baptism site, which Pope John Paul II, I think, said this is where Jesus was baptized. I mean, the river itself, the River Jordan, crisscrosses and it changed path over the last 2,000 years. And there are complexes of churches and little Roman baths and baths here and there. And so they say that this is the genuine baptism site. You could see some of the worshippers coming up from the river after being baptized, and one of their fathers also. There's lots of Greek Orthodox coming who have, I think, a couple of churches there. Lots of denominations have churches on that part of the river. So you go to that place, and then you come back to the direction of the Dead Sea, and then I start driving up towards Madaba. Madaba is right between Amman and Karak there. And I go to a place which I used to go with my dad when I was a young kid. We used to go camping. We used to go camping on this road, which in the old days was just a dirt path. And it was very hairy to get to this particular stunning place. You don't think these things exist in the region. This is what's called Ma'in, and they're hot springs. And the water coming down the fountain the spring there. There are three or four of these. One is warm, one is cold, one is very hot. And we used to go there as kids and camp there. There was nothing, nothing. And now there is this absolutely fascinating place, which is a brand new hotel over there. And the sad thing, I was there in February 2013, and the occupancy rate for the two nights when I was there was 10%. It's sheer luxury, very cheap compared to the standards here, and the scenery is beautiful, the water is beautiful there, and you can spend days in that place. There's a short drive up to another restaurant which looks over the Dead Sea. So again, it's a very serene, very calm place, which you don't see many people going there. And then from there, I drive up to Madaba. Madaba is an old city in Jordan. Sorry, before I reach Madaba, I stop en route at this spot here. This is where supposedly Moses led his people, and he stopped there and looked towards the west. Okay. And it is now controlled by the Franciscan brothers. And as it says, it's the memorial of Moses. It's called Nebo, Mount Nebo. For some of you may have been there. Again, it's the scenery from there is absolutely stunning. And this is, it's not very clear. I took a picture of it. This is the map which is there. And you could see, for example, the first one, it says Qumran, 25 kilometers. That's where the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered, Qumran. The Mount Olive, Jerusalem, is 40 kilometers. So geographically, the distances are very, very close. Lake Tiberias is to the east, northeast. Hebron is there. Bethlehem is there. Ramallah is there. Jericho is there. And so on a clear day, you can actually get some fantastic views from that point there. And supposedly, this is what Moses saw when he arrived at that point. Now there is a church there, which I think is Roman church as well, and it's been renovated and well looked after, and it's very pretty inside. As churches go, it's an extremely pretty church with beautiful mosaics inside it, very well looked after. From there, I normally head to Madaba, which I was trying to say, and Madaba has a fascinating church. It's a Greek Orthodox church, which again, is extremely pretty. And you see the ropes over there. That's the only thing which is holding you from looking at one of the oldest mosaics in the world, probably. And it's a map of the region. And when I was a kid, we used to go there. The guy said, "Oh, do you want to see it clearly?" And he would throw a bucket of water over it just to make the colors come out. Fortunately, nowadays, it's still, I mean, it's not protected by much, but it's a fascinating treasure over there. Now, this is, again, some people do that tour and they stop at Madaba. What I normally like to do is head eastwards towards the Iraqi border and stop at Azraq. There is an oasis at Azraq, and the interesting thing about it, it's also inhabited by, believe it or not, a group of Chechens from Chechnya who escaped from Tsarist Russia, and they sought refuge, and they still live there, and now they're in plenty of places in the country, but that's where their headquarters was, in that oasis. The oasis divided two parts, the Chechen, the Azraq Chechens, and the one which belongs to the Druze. There are Druze there as well, in that part. But I'm not going to talk about it, but en route to Azraq, you discover some fascinating place. And I'll tell you what, I have never, ever, in any of these trips, found a single other person stopping at these places. These are called the the desert castles, built during the Umayyad dynasty. These places are fascinating. This is the inside of the first castle over there. It's called the Castle of Kharrana. Fascinating places. This one was initially built during the reign of the Roman Emperor Caracalla, and then it was rebuilt again by the Umayyads. They used to use them as their winter castles because the temperature was nice and warm compared to the mountains of the city. And this last one is a fascinating one. You know what? When I went there for the first time, I stopped. There was a gate which was locked. So I wanted to go inside, and nobody would tell me how to get inside. Eventually, somebody said, oh, go to that tent with some camels and sheep there. So I went there, and the guy said, oh, there's the key. You go inside. So he gave me the key. I went inside. And the most exquisite mosaics are in that place. Fantastic place. You know, you take the key, you walk inside, you finish, you take the key back. Amazing. And these things are very close to my heart. I really like these castles because they're untouched still. So, Jerash, Celia told you about it. I'm not going to spend too much time about Jerash, except that, you know, it's the second most complete Roman city outside Italy. I think that's what we are told about it. And it's surrounded by houses. People used to build houses around the city, you know, and every time they dug for their foundations, they came up with ruins. You know, they would give you whatever you want. Just take it. Skeletons, you want lamps, Roman lamps, everything is there. So it's a fascinating place. That's when she was there first time. So, you know, tourism is really essential to the country. It really is essential. And all of these sites are at risk of what's going, all the mayhem that is surrounding us. The problems in eastwards, the problem westwards, the problem northwards, the problem southwards, everything around us now is a big problem. And tourism is a livelihood for people. You know, it's a livelihood for man and for beast as well, you know, because these people survive on tourism. Even this fellow over here, I mean, he is not the prettiest of creatures, but you know, what will they do, these guys, if they're not a tourist there? And just to finish with this, I mean, this is, I took this picture from this lady who was selling the stuff there. And I looked at them. I said, why are they all sad faces? Look at them. They're all sad faces. So she looked at me and she said, what is there to be happy about? And, you know, I didn't have an answer for that. I didn't have. So hopefully, the situation will change. This situation will improve. And for the sake of all what you've seen over here, that peace will come to the region eventually. And I thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you for that presentation. I want to remind our listening audiences that this is a Commonwealth Club program called Jordan with Dr. Maher Kalaji and Celia Menchel, chair of the club's member-led Middle East Forum. I'm Jonathan Curiel, the moderator for today's presentation, and this is the part of the program where we take questions from the audience. We have a number of questions that can be divided into cultural questions, but also political questions. And we'll start first with the cultural questions. And I think it's fair to say that a lot of people were impressed by your presentations. Having been to Jordan myself, I know I was. It's a reminder of how beautiful it is, and really how inspiring it is. I think you both use the words mystical. Biblical was in there as well, but a lot of words can describe Jordan. One of the questions that's come up, and I think this is an interesting question is, Jordan is a country of deserts, right? It's huge urban populations, but just from a practical standpoint, does it have a lot of farms? How are people able to get food there? Can you talk about that, please?
Yeah. Is this working? Yeah. The very fertile part of Jordan is the Jordan Valley. And that's where the agriculture is. And the Jordan Valley is quite, we get crops which are produced two or three times a year there. And we export, actually, things from the Jordan Valley. We have in the north as well, it's a forested area. I didn't show you pictures of that. There are some olive trees we produce. We're nearly self-sufficient in olive oil, for example. We import lots of wheat. We import many other things. But we produce and export a bit of agricultural produce, and that actually brings in quite a bit towards the economy as well. It's been a disaster recently because our export markets were Syria and Iraq. And both places are heavens at the moment, so clearly that cannot be done. And there were instances where people were just throwing the produce away. They couldn't do anything with it. They're looking at other export markets, the EU, Russia at the moment. I don't know what the outcome is.
I do have one number that I remember. 4% of the land of Jordan is arable. And that's around Amman. That's what I read.
There's a bit more in the Jordan Valley as well.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Both of you referenced movies. The Martian, which I haven't seen, you said was filmed in, I guess, Wadi Rum. Around that area, and also the famous Harrison Ford movie.
Yes, Raiders of the Lost Ark was filmed in Petra, and Lawrence of Arabia was filmed in Wadi Rum also.
Right. So one of the questions, I've been to Petra several times, and I think this is a question certainly to be gleaned from looking at the pictures. The buildings are carved from stone, right? But what about the insides of these buildings? Are there quote unquote insides, and has it been excavated at all? I mean, are there hidden treasures? I know Dr. Kalaji, you mentioned this monument that was unearthed today, or seems to be. But are there hidden treasures within the treasury?
No.
It's a facade. It's a facade, a beautiful facade.
I mean, they have discovered some artifacts, and they're in museums over there, but no, there are no treasures in there. So if you're looking for wealth in there, I think you're looking in the wrong place.
You mentioned Dr. Kalaji, the different groups of immigrants who have come to Jordan over the years, not just of course in the last decades, but centuries. Can you talk about, especially having been born and raised there, how Jordan is really a sort of multicultural place and has been pretty much for centuries?
How long do you want me to go back? I mean, it's an interesting question. It's a very good question. I mean, the best thing to comment on is the most recent history, the formation of the country itself as a kingdom of Jordan. You had the Prince Abdullah, who came from Arabia. After the promise of the British to grant him a kingdom over there, and eventually that did not materialize in Syria, so he was given the emirate in Jordan. Jordan itself, you've got the Bedouin tribes, the nomadic tribes, which move across borders with Saudi Arabia, the southeastern part of it. There were lots of mass movements during the Ottoman Empire from Syria. That's why there's a very large section of the society which traces its roots back to Syria, throughout Syria, including myself. There are lots of Palestinians Don't forget, there were no borders in those days, so there was mass movement of people in there. And Jordan, particularly the south and the western parts, there were people from Gaza who came over. Lots of names that you, family names that you find in Jordan, trace their roots back to families which came from the west of the river. Then, of course, you had the nomadic tribes which lived over there. And then you had the mass movements. We have Armenians in there, a large number of Armenians. We have the Chechens, as I said, the Druze, and a large number of Circassians. Circassians, they escaped from Russia as well, and they settled in Jordan. They were looking for sanctuary in the Ottoman Empire away from the Russians, and they settled there. This is how the country was established. The last census, which was in November 2015, the number of people living in Jordan was something like 9.5 million people, out of which 6.6 are Jordanians or have Jordanian passports. So 30% of the population at the moment are non-Jordanian. They call them guests. The largest of these are 1.25 million are Syrians. Syrian refugees. About 600,000 are Egyptian workers. There are numerous Iraqis in hundreds of thousands. I've got the figures in here. And Lebanese who escaped the war there. And people from Yemen, people from Libya. Just look at the names which are coming up where the wars are happening. So it's been a haven for all these refugees in there. And of course, there are Palestinians. There are Palestinians who are, you know, they do not have Jordanian IDs, and they constitute quite a large percentage of that 3 million people there.
Thank you for that. Another cultural question. I think this is a really good question. What was the motivation behind ever having created Petra? The treasury is, if it's just a facade, is it in a sense, like a lot of monuments for show and to impress people, or were there functional elements to it? Do you know?
I don't think there was anything functional, and believe me, I'm not an expert. It just struck me that the Nabataeans weren't architects. I remember reading that, and they copied a little bit of this and that from everybody, the Greeks, and yes, it says so in the book. But I don't know if it was meant to be a tomb. A lot of the buildings are meant to be tombs. Do you know what the purpose of it is?
I think there are lots of theories about it. But again, I refer you to the book which Celia had brought with her. And it's at the back over there. It's a very good question. I mean, I'm not going to start postulating now on something which I'm not absolutely 100% sure about. Even though I go there every year, I go for the beauty of the place and not to postulate on what happened there. I know for a fact that the Edomites were there before the Nabataeans. The Edomites, whose kingdom came from Moab, Madaba, all the way south to Aqaba, and as far west as Wadi Araba, they were there. They lived in the place and they had names for it, but the construction, as it happens now, only happened during the Nabataeans' time.
If someone listening to this were to be inspired and wanted to go to Amman, to Jordan, what is the best way to get there? You know, Celia, you mentioned taking Turkish Airlines.
Yes, it was a wonderful airline and very reasonable. I almost couldn't afford to go if they hadn't had that wonderful fair, and I also visit Israel quite often, and the opportunity arose. But coincidentally, very coincidentally, the Commonwealth Club, and I had no knowledge, is going to Egypt on October 10th, 24th, with a post-tour extension to Jordan, Petra, and Amman. 5 days and four nights for a certain amount of money, air transportation, a very special resorts, everything first class. Well, I stayed in hostels, and I got the cheapest flight and took the cheapest tour, but it was the best tour I've ever taken. But I can recommend this if you want to look into it, what the Commonwealth Club is doing. all kinds of airlines do fly there. It's very easy to get there from Israel. Many Israelis go. I met some on this trip.
I have booked my next flight on Lufthansa via Frankfurt in October, and that's $1,000 return, which allows me to stay in Europe also on the way back for a week.
Oh, my goodness.
So to Oman. So from San Francisco to Frankfurt, Frankfurt to Oman, and flying back the same route.
Well, my flight on Turkish Air was $660 round trip, San Francisco to Tel Aviv. Turkish Air does fly to Tel Aviv. And it was 3 hours shorter because, as I say, it went over Canada.
Wow. Wow. Somebody in the audience mentions that the airfare to Oman is half that of Tel Aviv from Europe as of 6 months ago.
Oman is a cheap destination to fly on. Yes, that's correct. Because there are, I mean, just like Tel Aviv, there are so many options there. Again, you know, you shop around and you'll always find, if you're willing to change flights from Europe, yeah, there's always very, very cheap alternatives. I've flown to Oman from London on one of the cheap carriers where you can fly there for about £100, £120. And that's EasyJet. They fly directly from Gatwick to Oman. You have to book in advance. It's very cheap.
I'm struck by both your presentations about this. When people talk about going to Jerusalem, people talk about visiting the Western Wall and having a religious experience, even within the walls of Jerusalem itself, even the new walls, but definitely the old walls, about feeling almost overwhelmed by a connection to, if not God, then the sort of the mystic religion, what have you. And it seems for me that Celia, that in your presentation, but definitely I glean this from you, Dr. Kalaji, that in a sense Jordan is very similarly inspiring, the landscape, but also the older centuries old buildings that were meant in a sense, yes, in their day to inspire and yet are still inspiring. Can you talk about what that is like? Especially as someone who hadn't been there before.
Oh, yes. Well, the architecture is beautiful. The historical aspects are beautiful. The colors are beautiful. But what made Jordan particularly beautiful to me was how kind everybody was to me. The Bedouins, the people I met in Amman. Remember, I was only there for 3 days, but everybody was so welcoming. And I know that's their reputation. So I guess that's what I would say.
Let's get into a little bit in the non-cultural questions. Sorry. Well, let me try to summarize it as one question, all the many questions that were asked. A lot of questions are asked about ISIS, about the long-term stability of Jordan, and given how it's been, subject to a lot of wars, it is amazing in a sense how intact it is, all things considered. But can you talk, especially Dr. Kalaji, just about your hopes for Jordan as a country?
That's a very good question, and thankfully I came prepared for that. There's a report which was written on June 29th, 2015, by David Schenkler, who's the director of the program on Arab politics at the Washington Institute, and I quote, "Jordan's economy has been particularly robust, but the 2011 regional uprising and their aftermath had a profound impact on the kingdom. Particularly detrimental were the multiple disruptions of the natural gas pipelines from Egypt, and that's because of terrorist actions there, which compelled Amman to purchase crude oil. That resulted in a $3 billion deficit, which for the country is huge. And that's 30% of the budget deficit. Then that was followed by wars in Iraq and Syria, which also curtailed Jordanian imports, which is what I was saying. It stymied expatriate remittances from both countries, from Iraq mainly, and undermined the state's transport industry. We were now landlocked on these sides. Meanwhile, the arrival of nearly a million Syrian refugees has strained the kingdom's infrastructure. In November 2010, 142,000 tourists in that month visited the kingdom. In April 2015, 78,000 came. Tourists visiting Petra were a quarter of what they were in 2010. Now, I could go on talking about this, but the best way to finish this discussion is a report which appeared just on March 29th in 2016 by Joost Hilterman in the New York Review of Books. And he says, "Poor Jordan, a small, economically precarious country. It shares 200-mile border with Syria. Yet unlike Syria's other neighbors, Turkey, Iraq, and Lebanon, it rarely gets any attention in the international press. People are focusing on Turkey with the issue of the refugees. And Ankara agreed to limit the number of asylum seekers. They're getting money for stopping people migrating into Europe. Hardly has anything been said about the crucial American ally on Syria's southern border. But as I observed recently, Jordan is struggling to cope with the vast numbers of refugees and an alarming rise in extremism." He finishes by saying, and that's very important, "We ignore it at our own peril."
Thank you for those words, yes. Dr. Galaji.
Could I step back to the previous question, only because something struck me, and what I do agree with what you said, but there's something else. This area of the world is the birthplace of the three major Abrahamic faiths, and when you're there, that touches you. The question was, what with the mystical feeling. I wanted to add that to what I had to say, because it is in many ways holy for three faiths, this region, and especially Jordan in biblically. So I did want to add that.
I mean, I don't want to prolong the agony of this subject, because it is an agonizing subject. It's painful.
Sorry.
Because if you look at the number of people who were killed in the region over the last 72 hours, for example, I'm going to ignore Syria, because we become immune to Syria. You know, you hear 100, 200 people, and you just nowadays, I don't know if it's only me, but you just flip the page. 30 people were killed in a suicide bombing in Baghdad yesterday. The day before yesterday, you had the four people who were shot in Tel Aviv. A day before that, five people were shot outside Amman. Okay, we all have our different political views on this, but without sorting out the political problems and the issues in the region, this will continue. There's no way to stop it unless we sort these problems out. It can't be won by force.
But I also think we have to go there. We really do. It's the most wonderful place, and we really should go. And before it's time to close, I wanted to say something, and Maher will help explain it to me. This is a very propitious time. It's the first time in 33 years, it'll be 33 years till it happens again, when Ramadan and Shavuot are at the same time. So to my Muslim friends, I'd like to say Ramadan Mubarak, and to my Jewish friends, I'd like to say Hag Shavuot Sameach. And what that means is that Muhammad, may peace be upon him, received the Quran at that time, that's Ramadan, and Moses received, or we believe Moses received, the Torah at that time. So it won't happen again for 33 years, and it's now. And while I'm at it, I did find what Queen Noor said in the end of her book. "The three great monotheistic faiths, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, spring from the same root, the faith of Abraham. They teach common values and principles that can and should be a unifying voice between all believers, summed up in the commandment of our one God to love others. I believe we all have a sacred duty to embrace and revive these shared universal values and begin to drown out extremism and intolerance. Those who believe in the power of our common humanity must join forces. There is a middle ground, and on that ground, faiths, nations, and peoples of the world can build just and lasting peace." That's Queen Noor.
We have just a few more minutes here, but I do want to add something that in my own research and so forth, I will note that Amman has become a center of startups, and that in a sense it's sort of like a mini Silicon Valley in Amman. So despite the many headlines we do see about what's happening in the Middle East, the high tech world has come to Amman, and not just to Jordan, of course, in other parts of the Middle East, in a way that doesn't get a lot of attention, but is also generating apps devoted to commerce, but also peaceful means. So your presentations talked about the touristic parts, but even, you know, a lot of people, tourists, go to Silicon Valley to see that. There are people who go to Amman to see the boom in startups, and I think that's another area that doesn't get a lot of attention, but is also significant and also indicative of where Jordan and the Middle East could go. So I will say that. Any final thoughts as we conclude, Dr. Khalaji?
I mean, that's absolutely correct. I mean, I said that I will stay positive in my talk, and hopefully I stayed positive apart from the last section. Amman itself is a vibrant city. It's a happening city. It's changing a lot. There are lots of entrepreneurs there. I know friends who, when we were kids, they dreamt about things, and now some of them are producing movies and cartoons for Hollywood, and that is done from Jordan. So your kids, grandkids, may be watching cartoons which actually have been made in Jordan. The company is called Rubicon, for example. There are lots of people who are, want to improve their lives, just like anybody else, and these things are happening there. But we can't stand on our own. That's the only thing, because everything around us is crumbling. With all the goodwill of people, that's not enough. I think more has to be done to help the place to actually survive. Survive is important, and to improve and to build a future for everyone. So these are my thoughts for the subject.
All right. So thank you again. A reminder that we've been listening to Dr. Maher Khalaji, a Jordanian born and raised scientist, and also Celia Menchel, chair of the club's member-led Middle East Forum. We want to thank our audiences here and those listening to the recording and on the internet. Now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California celebrating over 113 years of enlightened discussions is adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I didn't catch you.